Welcome to Holden Village. In the Creekside Room, today's speaker is Kathy Sorrells, and we'll be speaking on engaging in creative process, the creation. So let's listen in on Kathy.
We are moving through this creative process. As I mentioned to you before, nothing happens exactly in the order that we set, since we've already done creation, and we didn't exactly even get to inspiration. But we're going to come back to a few things. It was preparation. What I want to do is spend a little bit of time backing up to inspiration, and then we're going to move into the creation. We did our experiential part of the creation yesterday, but we're going to talk a little bit more about today. And I wanted to start with a poem again from, you all are going to know this by the end of the class, that one of my favorite poets is Mary Oliver, and it's also one of the only books of poetry that I brought with me. But I wanted to start with one, and this is going to connect somewhat to everything we've done, I hope. But also, right after this, we're going to lead in and talk about your walks that you've had, whether it's the hike or your delight walk that you had with a partner, if you can remember that far back. Doesn't it feel like we've been here about a month? I guess I have, but I mean, with you all. And I mean that in a very positive way.
Oh, it's just like a month. Language study.
Right. What's that? Gender? Well, I'm very appropriate, generally. Although I can switch. Language crossing here. It's like cross-dressing, you know, you can language. This poem is called Landscape. It's plain, the sheets of moss, except that they have no tongues, could lecture all day if they wanted about spiritual patience. Isn't it clear? The black oaks along the path are standing as though they were the most fragile of flowers. Every morning I walk like this around the pond, thinking, if the doors of my heart ever close, I am as good as dead. Every morning, so far, I'm alive. And now the crows break off from the rest of the darkness and burst up into the sky, as though all night they had thought of what they would like their lives to be and imagined their strong, thick wings. So I'll read it again, as you would expect. It's called Landscape. Isn't it plain the sheets of moss, except that they have no tongues, could lecture all day if they wanted about spiritual patience? Isn't it clear the black oaks along the path are standing as though they were the most fragile of flowers? Every morning I walk like this around the pond, thinking, if the doors of my heart ever close, I am as good as dead. Every morning, so far, I'm alive. And now the crows break off from the rest of the darkness and burst into the sky, as though all night they had thought of what they would like their lives to be and imagined their strong, thick wings.
Is that one of those that you made copies for us?
I already did it. But I only made 10, and I can make more. It's just that I don't want to make more than what we need. So if you'd like it, it's right here. And also, it's in the bookstore, the new and selected poems by Mary Oliver. If not, it's in pretty much any bookstore that you would go to outside of here. And along that line, I told John that I would make a push again, John from the bookstore, of the books that I had recommended that he get. And the first one, which I highly recommend, is called The Artist Way, A Spiritual Path to Higher Creativity. It's a 12-week exercise book, really, that takes you through discovering, recovering your creativity. And I think it's excellent. There's a lot of good material in here. And it's by Julia Cameron.
The artist, Juliet.
Julia.
Julia.
Cameron. The Artist Way. And it's in the bookstore. And John would love it if you bought it here. A Spiritual Path to Higher Creativity. And some other, this is the one that I just really would definitely recommend. And I think you would enjoy the exercises and working through it. The others, if you're interested, how many of you are familiar with Matthew Fox's stuff?
Matthew Fox?
Yeah. Creation Spirituality is one of the ones that I recommend. He's got several others. A book called Singing at the Top of Our Lungs. It's actually Women, Love, and Creativity is the title. Walking on Water, Reflections on Faith and Art. And this is a wonderful book. It's Earth Prayers from Around the World. And it's a collection of prayers from all different spiritual traditions. And not necessarily spiritual traditions, psychological traditions and others. And the last one is called Living Juicy Daily Morsels for Your Creative Soul, which is kind of fun. So, there we have the advertisement section. Sponsored by. Wanted to ask about your walk, your delight walk. Do you remember when you did that? With your walk with your partner. Back then.
Yes, we did.
Did anything come from that experience? Was it delightful?
It was utterly delightful in getting to know another person. It was much more intimately, and that was probably... we talked about what we were supposed to talk about for a while, and then we
then you talked about you what you really wanted to talk about. Good. Well, my walk, we never did talk about what we were supposed to talk about.
Then we did okay.
Yeah.
We got at least a B plus.
But we're not grading.
I think it's always delightful when people trust one another and share one. That's
just what's in the world. It's one of the blessings of life. Mm-hmm. I think Camille and I were delighted with the rushing water. I haven't been down to the river yet. And we both agreed that that's one enjoyable blessing of life. In the woods, in Norway, my husband got tired of me screaming at a waterfall. They found an abandoned, there was another waterfall.
Did you get a picture of yesterday's big waterfall?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, also we can talk about your other walks that you've taken, not just this one, but mainly what I'm trying to get at is know, how do we know what delights us and then do we share it? Do we know what delights us and then do we share it with other people?
Well, Betty and I were on our walk. Did I just interrupt somebody there?
We'll come back. Go ahead, Louise.
Okay. When Betty and I were on our walk the other day, which was down to the covered bridge and over the covered bridge, which all is just absolutely beautiful, we also saw a pine tree that was blooming or blossoming or producing little spears sticking upward that obviously would eventually grow into something larger. And it was nature at work in every way. Mm-hmm. All very beautiful.
Mm-hmm. I've never seen them before. They were a little purple. They were a purple maroon color. And sticky. Mm-hmm. And they were on the top of the tree. You know, they weren't hanging from all the branches. This is the top. Very interesting. I don't know what kind of everything.
This reminded me of a creative biology teacher I had in high school who used us, our class, as a kind of an experimental class. He took us out one day and we just had to dig out weeds. But we had to dig every rootlet down. We had to observe down there with fingers and toothpicks and whatever to get the whole root system out. makes you stop and look.
Stop and really see.
And look at nature's detail. Mm-hmm. It's a good learning experience, obviously, since I remember it 50 years later.
Yeah.
And we did that on our walk. We stopped and stared at things, nature's things, and in detail, which you often don't.
Oh, we could get into that, but you already did. You've already done that. Okay.
Yeah. I think I was aware more of my senses, particularly my sense of sight and my sense of hearing, my sense of feeling, coming from a large urban area. I was delighted by the freshness of the air. I was delighted by the wonderful sound of the stream as compared with the busy tooting of horns and all the things that I'm used to hearing where I live. When we came to little patches of snow, the coolness that there was there, I was very much aware of my senses and grateful, thinking about those perhaps who are
I was with Lila, and the thing that that I noticed so acutely was the difference in temperature when you went from the sun to the shade. You know, one area right next to the other, but there was such a different feel of the air with that little bit of shade.
Ruth and I had said before that we were doing this all the way over, driving over Stevens Pass.
Oh, you already had your delight walk.
We'd had it in the car, but we were, you know,
looking
like this.
And saying, oh.
Yeah, it's a little contrast from Iowa.
Yeah, it is a little contrast.
Well, that's a good point, is that we often do that when we're in a new environment. But I think the challenge for me is to keep doing that, and I think that's what the poem is about. And in many ways, and Mary Oliver, in fact, I don't know her personally, but I know some about her life, is that she has lived in the same place most of her life, literally in the same place, not just the same town. Yes. And she does take a walk every morning, and it's in the same area. It's through woods and then down to a beach area. But her poetry is often about how she sees things new again every day. So coming from Iowa to here, you are sort of startled and stunned by it. But how can we create the environment where we're startled and stunned every day by the wonder of the purple or the maroon or the, you know, and opening our senses, I think is a lot of what inspiration is about.
That was not the most positive view. We went that direction, and three big trucks came along the road with all of this dust and also in all of this glory. We had
there's a line in that poetry that you read about when my heart is awake.
When the doors of my
heart if the doors of my heart ever close, I am as good as dead. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And you said, can you recognize delight when you see it? I think that a lot has to do with your inner feelings, the way you are, whether and when you can be receptive or not, whether you are receptive or not receptive. Mm-hmm. Because I sometimes you go through kind of a desert place, and then you hit something that delights you. When you realize what a desert you've been in.
Absolutely.
Kathy, can I share a nature teaching thing that I did with students?
Sure.
And it's part of this learning of delight, but we were applying it in a different way. And it was, they had to go and find something in nature, or they could bring several things from nature and look at them very closely, at the construction and the design, but more color. And look at a leaf and how many you can find, 5, 10, 15 colors. Maybe on one kind of nature thing. You might try this for yourself because it's fun. Then we took it beyond that. And they had to use nature as their
inspiration and do an interior living environment using these colors from nature, because that's some of the most perfect way, and it tells how you can bring the outside inside.
That's a great, great story. And you have to be careful. I used to do interior. I used to be a cabinet maker and furniture builder and redecorate our remodeling. And I remodeled the second floor of someone's house. We took the roof off and put a new whole second floor with a cathedral ceiling. And so there's 16-foot ceiling in the bedroom that looked out over Mount Rainier. It was this glorious place. And I had this great notion, as you're saying here, of nature. And my two favorite colors, maybe, well, I'm not wearing them today, but are green and purple. And I decided that, or I suggested that we, because I love this sort of sage green and purple that are like lupins. So I thought, wouldn't it be lovely to have this sage green carpet and sort of purple lavender lupin walls? Now, I know this doesn't strike everybody as beautiful, but in my mind, there's this great deal of beauty here. Well, we did this. And again, remember, it's 16-foot cathedral ceiling, so there's a lot of wall space here. It was so purple. It was like the purple was just like bouncing off of everything. The first thing we ended up, then we had to cut it. We cut it, you know, a half. We cut it. We almost didn't have any lavender in there by the end. And it actually is very lovely at this point, but it, you have to be careful because nature fools you. It's a lot more subtle than you think.
Yeah, it is.
And we still, if anybody wants a purple paint, this person still has gallons of literally, I mean, she's giving it away.
But nature doesn't do it that way. You know, it's just a small.
Yeah, it's not a 16-foot ceiling. I know.
It was
truly
too dark. The purple was too
dark. Well, and it was bouncing off of itself. There was a lot of wall area. 16 feet.
A lot of window area.
Well, fair.
Lighten it up.
Yeah, fair amount. But it was in a wooded area. It's at different times of the day it was nicer. I kept trying to bring her in there when it was nice. She was like, but I have to sleep in here. She said it's too loud, is what she kept saying. Even at night, you could feel it sort of.
Was this a woman's room?
Yes, it was. Well, it was a couple.
A couple.
Yeah. But she was the one that was being more.
He slept right through.
Bring nature into decorating. We have in our church, we have an Eleanor Vandewater, an early Eleanor Vandewater tree picture. She's a fabric artist. Mm-hmm. And we recently put on a new addition, and this picture was redid the lounge, and it was the picture was moved to a room where I don't like it there because I think it's deserving of a more of a more prestigious place than this, because this is the room that is used mostly for meetings and stuff. But the fact is that we look out onto a wooded area, and there are two windows there, and this is hung directly between the two windows, and it's a large, you know, like yay. And it simply repeats. It simply has brought the woods, what you see outside, because it's a wooden picture, and it has simply brought the outside right into the room.
It's wonderful. Sounds nice. Well, that's what we were trying to do, but we brought too much of it. Way too much. What I want you to do is to think right now about two things. One of them is, who in your life inspires you? Who is an inspiration? There's probably been many people in your life who've inspired you, but right now, who inspires you? And then, what inspires you? Something that you might do regularly, whether it's, you know, reading, walking in nature, talking with people. What inspires you? And again, my definition of inspiration comes from what inspiration, the original meaning, it means to inspire, is to blow the breath into, to have the spirit move through you. So what inspires you? What gets the spirit I would imagine Jane would say something about music, and just knowing from the things that we've talked about. But so others of you, think about what inspires you, and then one person.
Does it have to be a person?
The first question was a person, and the second question was
something.
Yeah, it could be a thing, or like a book of poetry, or playing the piano, or you know, going to meetings or teaching. I mean, teaching inspires me. I love to teach. So my job, this is not like separate from your work necessarily. It doesn't have to be what inspires you is separate from what you did for work or do for work.
And you're talking about inspires you to do something creative.
Inspires you, it fills you, that you become filled by, you're moved by. Because that's what I think doing, being creative, if you are filled, if you're inspired, you are creative. That's my belief.
Without making up.
You don't have to do anything else. Just sit there. Be inspired.
Can who be an author, or do you want
yes.
a real life person?
Anybody. Anybody. And what one of the reasons why I was inspired to ask this question is some years ago I was reading, and I read that Pascal, you know, the French philosopher and scientist, I guess he's quite well known for, at one point in his life, in the middle of his life, he wrote down on a piece of paper one word that inspired him. And he pinned it on the inside of his clothes. And apparently he wore it for the rest of his life. I'm assuming he took it off and put it on another piece of clothing or something, you know, and maybe. But he wanted to wear it close to himself, what inspired him. And so what I'd like us to do is, you don't have to wear this, you can stick it in your pocket, you can put it wherever you'd like, but just take this and grab a piece of it off, any shape you want. Write the person's name.
What was his word?
I'll tell you in a minute. If you'd like colored pencils, we have a few of them. So write the person's name and then
this.
On one side, you can write the person's name, and on the other side, write. Did I guess right, maybe? Music inspires you? So you could put music, or you could draw musical notes or whatever. So put on one side the person's name, and it's not the thing about them that inspires you, but what inspires you, then on the other side. So there's a person on one side. Mm-hmm. Who knows French?
A little bit.
You thought a lot, but nothing more.
I have to consult. That's what we need, a little conflict. We're going to move into that later. So has everybody done it?
No. I don't.
Oh, the paper. Well, we got plenty of paper. Here you go.
Can it be a general category?
Yeah, like music or. Yeah, it can be. Hey, it inspires you. It can be anything. I don't care. You know, it can be a category. It can be an animal. It can be a fly walking up the wall. Something out of your imagination that never happened.
So you choose one.
So think about this. You're going to wear this all day.
Oh, we are going to wear it.
Well, you can put it in your pocket. I don't have pins. You can. We can wear it. You can tie it around your neck. Put it on your. Put it in your name tag. put it in the back. That'd be
yeah, you can put it in the back of your name tag or the front of your name tag, whichever one you want.
I'll write it in French. This is what I needed the consultation for. F-E-U. F-E-U. Which is fire.
Fire.
Fire. So he wore this close to his heart. Fire. I mean, think about fire. Yeah. So does anybody want to share theirs with us?
No.
And if you don't, you don't need to.
I will. And I was out of this end of building, I heard a woodpecker. And it reminded me of one of our grandson's second word. I've been trying to think of it all weekend. I mean, all week. Because his first word was truck. And that reminded me. The second word was woodpecker.
Oh.
You had a woodpecker up on our telephone pole when he was at our house. And he, every time he heard that thing, he'd run to the window, woodpecker. I mean, the second word just.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
What guided me? What inspires you? My grandchildren do.
Yeah. Great.
It's phenomenal to hear them say the first thing.
Yeah.
I will second that. I wrote down the name of my grandchild that lives in Des Moines where I live so that I see him often, and I am totally inspired by the way he sees things, the way he puts thoughts together, the kinds of things he does, and the phenomenal growth from week to week.
Huh?
Yeah, just marvelous.
So what does it feel like when you're inspired?
I'm happy.
Happy. You laugh. Okay.
And you want more. You know, you want. I just want to see him often.
And a little pain and a little suffering, thinking of what we're doing to our planet. I guess that's why I'm more interested in
the
ecology than I ever was. What am I leaving my grandkids?
So truly, what inspires you also draws out your concerns and your pain. And yes,
it inspires me. But then when the director says you've got to memorize this, then I get the pain.
So what does it feel like when you're inspired? Just a second.
Oh, joyful.
Okay. I just, everybody, you know, we all know, but I'd like to bring out the words for it.
I think when I'm inspired most, for me, it evokes tears. Now, maybe I'm mischaracterizing what I'm feeling as inspiration.
I often feel tears when I feel inspired. It's a high degree of emotionality.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I feel fully engaged and really attentive. Mm-hmm. And sometimes the person I wrote down is not one that I always agree with, but that is one that engages me so that I'm fully involved in the moment and become then challenged and sometimes angry.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm there.
You show up.
That's your
time. Yeah, you're present. Yeah.
My thing is back to the water. Is the rocky shore with the ocean and so forth. But to me, that's really inspires me, and I feel whole or full.
Whole, full, joyful, present.
Well,
okay, my brother Gene is my inspiration. Was when I was a pretty little kid, he opened my mind one time because we lived in a really cultural desert, and some missionaries from China had come and visited the town, and I had gone and listened to them, and I had heard about these heathen Chinese and how they treated their children and so forth. And I came home, my brothers hadn't gotten to go because I don't know why, but anyway. And I was expounding to them on this culture over here that was a terrible, awful heathen culture. And my brother Gene, he was my swearing brother, he looked at me and he said, "You," and he was also redundant, "you stupid, dumb little idiot. Do you think those people live that way because they want to?" So that stayed with me all my life. And I guess what inspires me is literature, because it takes you all over.
I'm inspired by being out in the wilderness and hiking in the wilderness, because it gives I withdraw from the world that I'm in every day and become very peaceful. I feel very complete and feel very satisfied. And the person that inspires me the most is an author who writes about that, and a woman who goes all over the world alone, hiking in wilderness areas, and right, I can relate to. It's an excitement I feel when I read her, what she has to say about where she is and the people she meets, and the risks that she takes, the fearlessness. She's so fearless. That's an inspiration.
I think I had a hard time sort of putting this down right away about who. And then I've just been reading the responses that we've sent out to our alumni for an alumni reunion. And some of them have really brought me to tears. But also, there's been a great delight in this, because you see what they've done with their lives. And the positive things that they've done, and you think, well, maybe we had an influence that we didn't even really know. And then I have a view that Ruth has been exclaiming about every day where I live. And it just brings me delight, because it's not only the nature, but I'm right above a park. And that park has everyone and everything in it. All these activities go on. You see volleyball games in the afternoon of the university students. You see little small children doing everything. You always see the elderly out there getting their fitness. And it just doesn't make you get old, because you're so involved with all the faces of life. And it's just a delight.
Well, I would like you to wear these today and periodically put it somewhere where you will notice it. And unlike Pascal, you don't have to wear it for the rest of your life. But just to remind us what inspires us, and then also to ask the question of how can I encourage that more in my life? Whatever it is that inspires me, how can I encourage that more in my life?
Thank you.
I wanted to go on and do some reading, actually, from the Bible about the creation. This class is on creativity and spirituality, and we've tried to talk around those subjects and different aspects of it since we started on Monday. First thing that we did, we were talking about the characteristics of a person who's creative. Then we talked a bit about the creative process. We went into the preparation phase and talked about emptying ourselves and about letting go and about creating a receptive environment within ourselves. Moved into a discussion about mystery and what that meant. We've talked a little bit about inspiration. Y'all have had an opportunity to create some things. To brainstorm together on your creations. You've done a lot of things around creativity and spirituality, and we've talked about how some of them connect. What I'd like to do is go back to, for everyone in this room, our real original creation story is from the Bible, and see if we can learn anything more about creativity and spirituality by reading that story, listening to that story again, and or do you hear some of the lessons that we've tried to cover this week coming through? So are things reinforced or do new things come up?
Is this doing something? Can I move it? Right,
yeah.
Can I move myself?
I think it is doing something, but I think it can do it right there too. So this is a relatively new experience for me. I don't generally read from the Bible. I mean, I do for myself, but I don't generally in workshops have the opportunity to read from the Bible. So I'm going to today. Yes. And we'll skip around some. I'm going to start with Genesis and read some from that, and then we'll move into Exodus. And what I want to do is both thinking of God as the creator, but then also as Moses as the creator. In some ways, Moses was the creator of our understanding of God in our culture. So Moses was an incredible creator himself. And I'm not suggesting that he created God, but he created in this story. So I'll read it, and then I'll stop at various points. And I would actually like you all to stop me and just say, if anything comes up, does anything sound familiar, or is there some new message here, something you hadn't thought of before, or something that we haven't brought up yet? So in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. The earth was without form and void, and darkness was upon the face of the deep. And the Spirit of God was moving over the face of the waters.
I have to say something. I was in a pre-theological prep school. We had an old history professor who was very unforgettable. And for that class, he gave the Hebrew word for the way things were. And the word is tohu vabohu. And it's such a strange word. And it sounds so confused and mixed up. And that's the way it was. And
can you say it again?
I forgot. Tohu vabohu. I'm sure that's the way it was. I think that's what it was.
Well, it sounds good to me.
I probably know Hebrew. I just say that's not right.
And it means the way things were?
Yeah, when the world, when it was without form.
Ah, say it again. Tohu vabohu?
Yeah, I think
tohu vabohu.
Right.
And it's very significant in a way because it is about the void. There was nothing. There was a void. And out of that, mystery.
Wait. There was water.
In the beginning,
God created the heavens and the earth. The earth was without form and void, and darkness was upon the face of the deep. And the Spirit of God was moving over the face of the waters.
Waters.
Yeah.
It was there.
No.
Whoa. Oh, we haven't even gotten the first paragraph. It was there. Okay.
I didn't make it. I didn't mind it.
I was telling my 5-year-old great-grandson the story of creation, Genesis story, and dressing up a little bit for him and so forth, and we didn't get very far into it, and he said, Grandma, what about the universe and the galaxies? How did God just create the earth? So I backed up real fast and said, well, of course. he had already created the universe and the galaxies and so forth. And this is just the story about what he did with our purpose. Mm. I mean,
well, I'm not, this is, actually, I should have prefaced this by saying that I'm not interested really in getting into a discussion about creationism and science, about what was real. I read this story, and I will tell you honestly, my perspective, I read these stories as mythology. That does not mean that they are false. They're very true and very powerful, but I don't read them as factual.
Okay, allegory is a better term.
Yeah. Well, they're allegorical. It depends on how you define myth, too, but they're allegorical. And that's how I read them, and again, I don't want to go into a lot of discussion about that. But the thing that I thought was interesting is interesting in this part is, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. The earth was without form and void, and darkness was upon the face of the deep. And then we go on. And the third verse says, and God said, let there be light, and there was light. And God saw that the light was good, and God separated the light from the darkness. I'm trying to read this as if I'm reading this for the first time. Last night I read about 20 different creation myths from different cultures. And you read it and you go, oh my God, that is the weirdest thing I ever heard. Because they're so unusual. So it's like the thought of how the world was created. I'm trying to read this not to say this is the weirdest thing I ever heard, but to read it as if it's the first time I read it.
Didn't you find some similarities?
Oh yeah, there's a lot of similarities. Let there be light, and there was light, and God saw that the light was good, and God separated the light from the darkness. God called the light day, and the darkness he called night, and there was evening, and there was morning, one day. And God said, let there be a firmament in the midst of the waters, and let it separate the waters from the waters. And God made the firmament and separated the waters which were under the firmament from the waters which were above the firmament. And it was so. And God called the firmament heaven, and there was evening and there was morning a second day. And God said, let the waters under the heavens be gathered together into one place, and let the dry land appear. And it was so. God called the dry land earth, and the waters that were gathered together he called seas. And God saw that it was good. And God said, let the earth put forth vegetation, plants yielding seed, and fruit trees bearing fruit, in which is their seed, each according to its kind upon the earth. And it was so. The earth brought forth vegetation, plants yielding seed according to their own kinds, and the trees bearing fruit, in which is their seed, each according to its kind. And God saw that it was good, and there was an evening, and there was a morning, a third day. Any comments? And God said, let there be lights in the firmament of the heavens to separate the day from the night, and let them be for signs and for seasons and for days and years. And let them be lights in the firmament of the heavens to give light upon the earth. And it was so. And God made the two great lights, the greater light to rule the day and the lesser light to rule the night. I had not read that quite like that before, that at night there is light. Mm-hmm. It's just a lesser light. So in our darkness, if you think it metaphorically, there is light. There is lesser light.
Someone was telling us just yesterday about how it is here when the snow is so reflective mm-hmm. that you can actually read by the moonlight. Mm-hmm. It's bright. So there's that much light.
It was glorious on the full moon when I was here. It didn't come up. It came right up over Buckskin at about 11:30, and we waited up to see that pour over the mountain is what it did. It looked like just silver pouring over it. And God set them in the firmament of the heavens to give light upon the earth, to rule over the day and over the night, and to separate the light from the darkness. And God saw that it was good. And there was evening, and there was morning, a fourth day. And God said, let the waters bring forth swarms of living creatures, and let birds fly above the earth across the firmament of the heavens. So God created the great sea monsters and every living creature that moves, with which the waters swam, according to their kinds, and every winged bird. God saw that it was good, and God blessed them, saying, "Be fruitful and multiply, and fill the waters in the sea, and let birds multiply on the earth." And there was evening, and there was morning, a fifth day. Which again, in that, is to be fruitful and to multiply, it's to be creators. He's saying to the creatures in the world to create as well. And God said, "Let the earth bring forth living creatures according to their kinds, cattle and creeping things and beasts of the earth according to their kind." And it was so. And God made the beasts of the earth according to their kinds and the cattle according to their kinds and everything that creeps upon the earth according to its kind. And God saw that it was great, good. Then God said, "Let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the birds of the air, and over the cattle, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps upon the earth." So, God made man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. And God blessed them, and God said to them, "Be fruitful and multiply, and fill the earth and subdue it, and have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the air and every living thing that moves upon the earth." So if you read that, essentially, God is commanding us to be creators. He says he's making us in his own image. "Behold, I have given you every plant yielding seed which is upon the face of the earth, and every tree with seed in its fruit. You shall have them for food, and to every beast of the earth, and every bird of the air, and to everything that creeps on the earth, everything that has breath of life. I have given every green plant for food." And it was so. And God said, "Everything that he has made," and God saw everything that he had made, and behold, it was very good. And there was evening, and there was morning, a sixth day. "Thus the heavens and the earth were finished, and all the host of them. And on the seventh day God finished his work which he had done, and he rested on the seventh day for all of his work which he had done. So God blessed the seventh day and hallowed it, because on it God rested from all his work which he had done in creation." Which tells you how you have to rest. Creation is a very challenging thing. "These are the creations of the heavens and the earth when they were created. In the day that the Lord God made the earth and the heavens, when no plant of the field was yet in the earth, and no herb of the field had yet sprung up, for the Lord God had not caused it to rain upon the earth, and there was no man to till the ground. But a mist went up from the earth and watered the whole face of the ground. Then the Lord God formed man of dust from the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life. And man became a living being." A couple of you were at the workshop by Ted Hutchison, who was here last week, and he did a wonderful telling of the story. And he asked us at that point, after he said this, "Then the Lord God formed man of dust from the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and man became a living being." Take a couple of deep breaths. The breath of life is breathed into us. "Then the Lord God formed man of dust from the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and man became a living being. And the Lord God planted a garden in Eden in the east, and there he put the man whom he had formed. And out of the ground the Lord God made to grow every tree that is pleasant to the sight and a good, every tree that is pleasant to the sight and good for food. The tree of life also in the midst of the garden, and the tree of the knowledge of good and evil."
And God breathed into man I believe that's what gives us the difference between, distinguishes us from the animals.
And the whole metaphor, allegory, like you said, it's allegorical. It's a metaphor of reaching down into the dust and taking that clay to form man, and then breathing the breath of life. Before I go on to Exodus, which I just found reading it last night, all this stuff came up from the class. But I wanted to ask if anything struck you hearing it after this class. And did anything strike you about creativity, about spirituality, differently than, I'm sure you all are familiar with this, but did anything strike you differently or anew, or reinforce something that you've always felt?
The word dominion is interesting because it involves a respect for and a preservation of and not an only a reckless use of, which is something I think we have had to slowly come to. You know, it's not, it's there, we can take it all, it's just there, God said, use it. Well, it's more than that. Dominion really means management. Wise use, like Chief Seattle.
Right.
I think the awesomeness of creation, I mean, I've read that many, many, many times, but the awesomeness of creation came to me one time, a very prosaic thing. I bit the inside of my cheek, which set me to thinking about the intricacy of the tremendous engineering feat of just the human mouth, and then extrapolated from that the ingenuity of the perfection of every organism for its own reproduction and humans and things and stuff. Yeah. I mean, only God could do this.
It's quite amazing.
And how the universe is still expanding. The larger the telescopes, the more they see and realize that.
They're still trying to prove that there. I mean, that's the major belief, but they haven't proved it yet.
Well, it's the current scientific myth. As is chaos theory, and one of the things we would have done if we had more time. I don't. How many are familiar with chaos theory? To some extent, it's fascinating, but it's the contemporary myth. It's the contemporary myth. Chaos theory. I'll just leave you with that. We'll talk about it. I mean, we say that we don't have myth. We do. We have very strong myths because, as Andy said, it's not proved. It's not known for sure. It's mythology. It's not. It's what we believe in and what guides us. It's what guides us.
Which one of the biblical authors was it that described us as being fearfully and wonderfully? Psalms. Do you recall the passage, we are fearfully and wonderfully made, where that's from? Is it the Psalms or is it
I guess I don't identify it. No.
Well, whomever it was.
Well, yeah.
So I'm going to read from Exodus. And and I'll stop at various places. But as I said, as I read through here, it reminded me a lot of our conversations about our fears of being creators. Now Moses was keeping the flock of his father-in-law, Jethro, the priest of the... See, I'm not familiar with the pronunciation on some of these, so you'll have to excuse me if I mispronounce it. Okay, the priest of Midian, is that right? And he led his flock to the west side of the wilderness and came to Horeb. Is that right? The mountain of God. And the angel of the Lord appeared to him in a flame of fire out of the midst of a bush. And he looked, and lo, the bush was burning, yet it was not consumed. And Moses said, I will turn aside and see this great sight, why the bush is not burnt. When the Lord saw that he turned aside to see, God called to him out of the bush, Moses, Moses. And he said, here am I. Then he said, do not come near. Put off your shoes from your feet, for the place on which you are standing is holy ground. And he said, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. And Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look at God. Then the Lord said, I have seen the affliction of my people who are in Egypt and have heard their cry because of their taskmasters. I know their suffering, and I have come down to deliver them out of the hand of the Egyptians and to bring them up out of that land to a good and broad land, a land flowing with milk and honey, to the place of the Canaanites and the Hittites and the Amorites and the Perizzites. Thank you. And the Hivites and the Jacobites. And now, behold, the cry of the people of Israel has come to me, and I have seen the oppression with which the Egyptians oppress them. Come, I will send you to Pharaoh, that you may bring forth my people, the sons of Israel, out of Egypt. Apparently, Moses, the word actually means to bring out, to bring forth. But Moses said to God, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the sons of Israel out of Egypt? Who am I that should be the creator, that should do this task? He said, But I will be with you, and this shall be the sign for you that I have sent you. When you have brought forth the people out of Egypt, you shall serve God upon the mountain. Then Moses said to God, if I come to the people of Israel and say to them, the God of your fathers has sent me to you, and they ask me, what is his name? What shall I say to them? God said to Moses, I am who I am. And he said, say this to the people of Israel, I am has sent me to you. Apparently, when you look at the Hebrew, the I am, that I am, It's the Yahweh is the word to be. It's I am. And I am also can be looked at, apparently in Hebrew, as the creation, as the bringing forth, to bring forth, I am. And that's the same as what a creator is. So he's saying, I am. Right, I am. Right, it's a very active, very vital word. God also said to Moses, say this to the people of Israel, the Lord, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob, has sent me to you. This is my name forever, and thus I am to be remembered throughout all generations. Go and gather the elders of Israel together and say to them, the Lord, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham and of Isaac and of Jacob, has appeared to you, saying, I have observed you and what has been done to you in Egypt. And I promise that I will bring you up out of the affliction of Egypt to the land of the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Perizzites, I know it's not quite right, the Hivites and the Jacobites, a land flowing with milk and honey. And they will hearken to your voice. And you and the elders of Israel shall go to the king of Egypt and say to him, the Lord, the God of the Hebrews, has met with us. And now we pray you, let us go a 3 days' journey into the wilderness that we may sacrifice to the Lord our God. Any comments?
Interesting that Archaeology Magazine is here on Pharaoh's face.
I want to correct a statement on me.
the universe is currently expanding. It is, I mean, but whether it's going to continue to expand or not depends on the mass of, in the universe, and they're trying to determine what it is, and that, based on what it is, determines whether it's going to continue to expand forever or whether it's going to begin to contract. And so right now, it is still expanding. Now, okay. I'm interested in this. I've been reading up on it.
Thank you. Any other comments about the text?
Well, I made a mistake.
Andy, I appreciate that. And I actually appreciate that we can just talk about whatever we need to talk about when we're doing this. And I'm curious if anything came up as I was reading it again about the process. And if not, we'll just keep going.
Well, God sure got Moses' attention with that burning bush.
He certainly did.
And who wouldn't wonder whether they were standing in a safe place if you saw the bush speaking and burning at the same time?
Right.
But the lack of confidence is a point, too. Mm-hmm. He didn't think he could do it. That's where we come at creativity sometimes.
So I will stretch out my hand and smite Egypt with all the wonders which I will do to it. After that, he will let you go, and I will give this people favor in the sight of the Egyptians. And when you go, you shall not go empty, but each woman shall ask of her neighbor and of her who sojourns in her house, jewelry of silver and of gold and clothing, and you shall put them on your sons and on your daughters. Thus you shall despoil the Egyptians. Then Moses answered, "But behold, they will not believe me or listen to my voice, for they will say, 'The Lord did not appear to you.'" The Lord said to him, "What is that in your hand?" He said, "A rod." And he goes on to talk about the rod. But again, Moses said, "They won't believe me as the person who might be a creator, as a person who might pull them forth." And we've all said that, "Well, I can't do this." Not me, please. Could you just step over and ask the next person to actually pull forth?
The thing that strikes me about that is that it's also, when once we see the holy and confront it and encounter it, there's a kind of responsibility that gets shifted to us. Mm-hmm. And Moses, was saying, "I don't want to do this." Mm-hmm. And probably out of a two-pronged kind of thing, "I can't do it," but also, "I'm not sure I want to do it." Mm-hmm. And I think for all, at least for myself, that's part of the encountering of God, is mm-hmm. that there becomes a kind of responsibility once that encounter happens.
Mm-hmm. Does everybody know Moses' history by being raised in Pharaoh's home, my Pharaoh's daughter? Another reason that not the people wouldn't believe him, because he had been brought up in the king's palace, mm-hmm. and then to come back and try to talk to the older people, they would resent him, mm-hmm. believe where he was coming from. Mm-hmm. And also the reason he fled is because he killed a man, mm-hmm. and now he's supposed to go back.
Right.
It seems to me Moses is saying he just doesn't want to do it.
That's right.
I mean, because if God spoke to you, and you knew it was God speaking to you, and he was telling you to do something, you wouldn't worry about whether you could do it or not. You just knew he could. And so you go ahead and give it a shot.
But he had an impediment too, didn't he? Mm-hmm. Couldn't speak well.
Mm-hmm. Well, we think, didn't he?
One of his brothers.
Yes. Then Moses answered, "But behold, they will not believe me or listen to my voice, for they will say, 'The Lord did not appear to you.'" The Lord said to him, "What is that in your hand?" He said, "A rod." And he said, "Cast it on the ground." So he cast it on the ground, and it became a serpent. And Moses fled from it. I mean, that's... And it wasn't even a serpent. But it looked like one, maybe. You know, something you would flee from. But the Lord said to Moses, "Put out your hand and take it by the tail." I didn't say that exactly, but so he put out his hand and caught it, and it became a rod in his hand, that they that they may believe that the Lord, the God of their fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob, has appeared to you. Again the Lord said to him, put your hand into your bosom. And he put his hand into his bosom, and when he took it out, behold, his hand was leprous, as white as snow. Then God said, put your hand back into your bosom. So he put his hand back into his bosom, and when he took it out, what is he, Moses doing by this point? Incredible amount of trust.
No, he hadn't trusted anything. God's still working.
He's scared, but he's created some sort of trust. Well, we'll see. Then God said, put your hand back into your bosom. So he put his hand back into his bosom, and when he took it out, behold, it was restored like the rest of his flesh. The relationship is one of creating trust. I'm not sure he trusts them yet, but if they will not believe you, God said, or heed the first sign, they may believe the latter sign. If they will not believe even these two signs or heed your voice, you shall take some water from the Nile and pour it upon the dry ground, and the water which you shall take from the Nile will become blood upon the dry ground. But Moses said to the Lord, oh, my Lord, I am not eloquent. Either heretofore or since thou hast spoken to thy servant, but I am slow of speech and of tongue. So he's still saying, no, I don't want to do this. Find somebody else. I'm not perfect enough, is what spoke to me. I can't do this. I'm not the one that is called to create in this way. Go get somebody else. I'm not good enough. I can't write. That's why I can't write this book. You know, I can't paint. Are you going to say something? Breath.
Just to breathe.
Let's see where we were. But Moses said to the Lord, oh, my Lord, I am not eloquent, either heretofore or since thou hast spoken to thy servant, but I am slow of speech and of tongue. Then the Lord said to him, who has made man's mouth? Who makes him dumb or deaf or seeing or blind? Is it not I, the Lord? Now therefore go, and I will be with your mouth and teach you what you shall speak. But he still says, Moses says, oh, my Lord, send, I pray, some other person. So he's saying, God is saying to him, I will inspire you. I will breathe the breath into you. I will be your mouth. I will speak for you. You don't have to do anything. I'll do it. And he still says, no, I can't do this. Send, I pray, some other person. Then the anger of the Lord was kindled against Moses, and he said, is there not Aaron, your brother, the Levite? I know that he can speak well, and behold, he is coming out to meet you. And when he sees you, he will be glad in his heart. And you shall speak to him and put the words in his mouth, and I will be with your mouth and with your mouth and with his mouth and will teach you what you shall do. He shall speak for you to the people, and he shall be a mouth for you, and you shall be to him as God. And you shall take in your hand this rod with which you shall do the signs. And I think that I won't continue reading on, but I wanted to, clearly we got most of the points and thoughts. I just wanted to ask as we finish this part up to see if anything else struck you in terms of the creative process and the spiritual process. Yes?
Something that I think, like the last thing that you just read, to me, doesn't this say something about the way God gives special talents to special people? I mean,
we all have a gift.
Aaron had the talent for speaking, so God says, okay, we'll use him to be the spokesperson. Mm-hmm. You know, some people sing beautifully, so they can use their voice to inspire other people. Mm-hmm. Or, and other people can feel the pain because they can't produce those lovely sounds.
And we all have gifts.
But I guess this is what I'm getting to. Mm-hmm. Gifts. Not everybody has some gifts, but some people have certain gifts in much greater abundance. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think that some people, everyone has gifts, and I think it's a matter of finding what your gift is and cultivating that. Yeah.
Being willing to use it.
Yeah. Not holding back.
Back to your creation story. This is a delightful book over in the bookstore that I bought for my grandchildren. It's called Does God Have a Big Toe? And it gives you an entirely different picture of the creation and the garden and the animals and all. So it's written by a rabbi, but it's delightful if anybody's looking for grandchildren. The storybooks for Bible schools. It's a fun picture of creation, too.
I think that both of us, the stories speak to a continuing process and change and trying again. Even God didn't make everything at once. Mm-hmm. Rest, like with us trying this clay stuff, not well, it was one step to try that, not just say, no, I can't do it. So then you try that, and then maybe try something else.
And earlier we talked about the creative process, that it's not just one cycle and you're done and you've created it. And I think that's somewhat what you're saying. It's more of a spiral. You keep moving through it and moving around it.
I have a singer friend who does a beautiful baritone voice and has done concerts, and he has made a recording of this very story of Moses with the rod, and he does it very dramatically and very beautifully. At the end of the song, at the end of the piece, he leaves you with the question, what do you have in your hand?
Good question.
Yeah. It's a very good question.
Yeah.
I think that the one piece that I wanted to read at the end today speaks to that. And I'll just read it now, and then we'll talk a little bit about a few other things. But it's by Martha Graham, who said this. There is a vitality, a life force, an energy, a quickening that is translated through you into action. And because there is only one of you in all of time, this expression is unique. And if you block it, it will never exist through any other medium and be lost. The world will not have it. It is not your business to determine how good it is, nor how valuable, nor how it compares with other expressions. It is your business to keep yours clearly and directly, to keep the channel open, whether you choose to take an art class, keep a journal, record your dreams, dance your story, or live each day from your own creative source. Above all, keep the channel open, which is, I think, knowing what the rod is and using it, knowing what is the rod in your hand and using it. I have extra copies. Thank you for your tolerant listening of my reading from the Bible. And but before we go, and we will leave, be done in just a minute, is just want to ask if anybody has any thoughts or stories or comments that they want to add before we close. Yes?
Well, I have a little story. It's about a little boy who got this thing all together, all at once, practically. My father used to tell the story. This little boy went to summer school regularly, and one day he came rushing home from summer school and sat down at the kitchen table, got out his paper and crayons, and was drawing away like crazy. And his mother said, "What are you drawing?" And he said, "I'm making a picture of God." And he And she said, oh, you can't do that. Nobody knows what God looks like. You must have misunderstood what you heard. He said, come on, come on.